Hello there and welcome. Today is Thursday, October the 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, WikiLeaks reveals more Clinton campaign emails, and Donald Trump seizes on it.
The election of Hillary Clinton would lead, in my opinion, to the almost total destruction of our country as we know it.
But new allegations now surfacing of Donald Trump's sexual misconduct. An American fast food chain puts its mascot on hiatus over creepy clowns. And a couple of great new movies in U.S. theaters. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, Republican presidential Donald Trump is facing new problems. Late Wednesday, the New York Times reported that two women claimed that Trump sexually assaulted them years ago. He's denying the allegations and threatening to sue the newspaper. The women claim that Trump touched them inappropriately, groping one of them and kissing another during separate encounters as long as three decades ago. But earlier on Wednesday, Trump was vowing to finish the last weeks of the race on his own terms. At a rally in Florida, he lashed out at party leaders for fleeing his campaign over a videotape leaked last week that showed him making crude comments about women.
Wouldn't you think that Paul Ryan would call and say, good going? In front of just about the largest audience for a second night debate in the history of the country. So, you know, you'd think that they'd say, great going, Don. Let's go. Let's beat this crook. She's a crook. Let's beat her. We got to stop it. No, he doesn't do that.
Well, Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign is facing more controversy as well, stemming from thousands of hacked emails written by staffers and published by WikiLeaks. Trump's campaign held a conference call with reporters earlier on Wednesday before the new sexual misconduct allegations surfaced, where his campaign advisors talked strategy as they try to go after Hillary Clinton on the information revealed by WikiLeaks. Joining me now, VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Catherine, you were on the line for that conference call with the Trump campaign. What did you learn?
Kellyanne Conway, Trump's campaign manager, and Newt Gingrich, one of his main campaign surrogates, were on the call, along with some preeminent Catholic leaders and conservative leaders as well, who are very upset by these revelations from WikiLeaks, these leaked emails showing Hillary Clinton campaign staffers writing and saying things that could be interpreted by many as anti-Catholic. And so the Trump campaign came out and said that this was an assault on religious freedom. It shows that Hillary Clinton has a track record of saying that she doesn't support Catholics, particularly on the issue of abortion, that she doesn't understand their viewpoint. And they called on her to apologize and fire the staffers involved. And, you know, what this really all comes out of is a theme that we've been seeing since the vice presidential debate of the Trump campaign saying that the Hillary Clinton campaign is actually the one playing dirty in this election season.
Do they have a plan of attack at this point?
Well, they were asked about that, and they said that they would continue to emphasize the issue throughout the last few weeks of the campaign season, but they didn't get into specifics.
You know, Catherine, the polls are very much in Hillary Clinton's favor right now, but I hear there's something unusual happening on social media to try to turn that around.
It is. It definitely is. And it all started with Nate Silver, who is this, you know, famous number cruncher who's especially good at these polling numbers, the polling data in the election season. And he ran the numbers for the Electoral College votes and found that if only men in the United States were allowed the right to vote, if women were completely taken out of the picture, Donald Trump would win by a landslide. So the Trump campaign, actually Eric Trump, Donald Trump's son, actually sent out these maps. And that triggered this whole storm on social media with Trump supporters starting this hashtag saying repeal the 19th. And of course, that refers to the 19th Amendment in the Constitution that gave women the right to vote here in the United States. And a lot of them were saying, well, hey, if this is what it takes for Donald Trump to win, repeal the 19th Amendment. And I took a quick look online and I even saw some female Trump supporters saying that if this is what it takes for Donald Trump to win, I give up my right to vote. And of course, the Hillary Clinton supporters and just women in general came out against that in force once that hashtag started trending. So it was another interesting Trump day on social media, and he wasn't even involved in it this time.
That's VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Thank you so much. Well, a wave of new political surveys do show Hillary Clinton likely to become the country's first female president. Let's check out what else has been trending on social media with G. Abby Lee. Hey, G, lots of talk about the Clinton hacked emails.
Hi, Lori. So WikiLeaks is getting a lot of attention on social media, with more than a million people talking about it on Facebook alone. WikiLeaks is an international journalistic organization, and it published information that allegedly showed the mainstream media's secret support for Hillary Clinton. Right-leaning media outlet Breitbart was quick to publish a story about it, and more than 11,000 people shared the article about the WikiLeaks within 4 hours. Its caption starts with, "One of Hillary's biggest lies, and there are many, is that Putin doesn't want her to win." And it goes on about her relationship with Moscow. On the other hand, Democracy Now!, a left-leaning program, quoted Li Feng of The Intercept, who argue the emails really show that Clinton is far more conservative and business-friendly when she's talking with aides or giving speeches to Wall Street banks. Now, to that post, many Bernie Sanders supporters replied that perhaps it's time for them to move on from this and really listen to what Bernie told them to do, which is to support Clinton.
Well, that's interesting to hear that, you know, Sanders supporters are showing that kind of support and camaraderie
right.
So close to Election Day. What else is trending?
I just wanted to add, you know, hashtag Stronger Together was a big trending hashtag when Bernie lost the primary.
Right.
Yeah, moving on to the next article. American pop legend Janet Jackson officially announced her pregnancy at age 50. So she revealed the news in an exclusive interview with People magazine, and many women are tweeting, "Jackson and former Spice Girls member Jerry Halliwell are giving hope to older wannabe moms." Halliwell, better known as Ginger Spice, is 44 this year, and she just had a baby.
Well, that's cool. Good for them. I also saw tweets about the Chinese premier visiting Macau. What's that about?
That's right. Chinese Premier Li Keqing's visit to Macau is also trending on Twitter, but that hype is mostly generated by the country's state-owned media.
Mm.
Li is quoted as saying it's been his long-cherished wish to be there, and Macau is a special administrative region of China with distinct Portuguese influence. And it's also known for casinos. Lori, back to you.
All right. Thanks so much, G. Well, you can follow her at G. Abby Lee. Well, Hillary Clinton's campaign chair says the FBI is now investigating Russia's possible role in hacking her campaign manager's emails, a role that is being denied by a top Russian government official. John Podesta telling reporters he's helping investigators and alleged that longtime Trump advisor Roger Stone had advanced knowledge of the leaks. Stone has admitted that he had been in contact with WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Joining me now to talk more about the implications of all of this, Jim Lewis, senior fellow with the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Jim, is the U.S. government pretty sure that Russia is behind these email hacks?
Yeah, there should be no doubt about that.
Why do you say that?
Two reasons. First, the forensic investigations carried out by private companies pointed directly back to the Russians. These are companies that have done a good job in the past. Second, the intelligence community, using its own sources, has been saying for more than a month that it was the Russians. Not publicly, but it's been an open secret in Washington.
Have we ever seen anything like this with another nation trying to interfere in our election process?
Not like this, no. The internet gives you wonderful opportunities. In the past, they would have had to send agents with bags of money that would have been caught. Now you can do this. So no, this is unique. Hopefully not a precedent. Yeah.
And they definitely seem to be aiming at one side of this election.
Gosh, do you think?
Well, you've got the Democratic Party hacked. Is it safe to assume that this whole WikiLeaks situation is attached to Russia?
Yeah, the Russians took the material and then laundered it through WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks either knowingly did this or did it without knowing it was the Russians. There's speculation that Assange knows he's helping Russian interests, but I don't know that precisely. It wouldn't be a big surprise.
Why do you think Russia is so dead set on not having Hillary Clinton be president?
Well, they're afraid of her. And I've heard this from other countries as well. One candidate, you know, has a established track record as Secretary of State, has a strong team behind her, and, you know, probably won't put up with some of the nonsense that the Russians have been able to get away with in the last couple of years. Trump, on the other hand, is an unknown. Maybe he'll be tough, maybe he won't. But certainly, when was the last time you saw an American presidential candidate appear on Russian TV to criticize the United States? The Russians, perhaps wrongly, have expectations.
Do you think Donald Trump had his hand in any of this?
No. You know, what part of it is, and the easiest way to say that is there anyone who thinks that they can control Donald Trump? So no, you never recruit him as an agent. He's not controllable. He's doing his own thing, and the Russians have decided to take advantage of it. And they've been able to influence some of his thinking, all the noise about how the election, if he loses, it will be because the election is rigged. That's probably Russian propaganda. But his ties, his financial ties to Moscow, his admiration for Putin, those raise concerns. But I don't think, there's no way he's a Russian agent.
You know, there's been a lot of media talk about what was in the WikiLeaks, but we aren't hearing a lot of talk about concern for the situation of Russia hacking into our election system.
Yeah, and that's a mistake. The rule we know in these cyber incidents is that if there is no reaction, if there are no consequences, the attacker feels like that's a green light. So the Russians are probably saying to themselves, why should I stop?
Have they already won?
They've done a lot of damage, and it will take some time to recover from it. But they've not yet been able to influence the election. I think the emails were originally damaging, but that's been overshadowed by other things. The question is, they're not going to give up. So what are they going to do before November 9th?
So do you think we should be concerned that our election could be in some way compromised?
We should be concerned that a major power hostile to the United States feels free to monkey around with our presidential election. That should be totally unacceptable. And this isn't an armed attack. It's not violence, but it's a huge breach of American sovereignty. And yeah, we should be deeply, deeply concerned.
Donald Trump has continued to say, well, maybe it was Russia, maybe it wasn't Russia. He said that at the last debate.
There's no doubt that it was the Russians.
Do you think he knows that?
If he doesn't know it, it's because he's closing his eyes to it. The Russians feel like they can get away with things, and they've been doing this ever since the invasion of Crimea. So to pretend that the Russians aren't involved in this is just sort of willful blindness.
And is there anything really that the U.S. can do?
There's a lot we can do. The first thing would be to be much more public about the security of the electoral system. It's secure because it's so disorganized and complicated, no one could possibly hack it. I mean, we have 3,000 counties that are going to be counting your votes. Good luck breaking into them, right? The second thing is, we're not going to go to war over this, but there are things you can do. The best thing that I've seen recently is the Russians appear to take it really badly when you expose their sports corruption. And there shouldn't be any doubt that Russians were on track to be banned from the Olympics. Suddenly there was a reversal. I'll bet you could find some financial transactions. They probably bought some international sports officials, and we need to use that because we know it hurts them. We need to say, here's the corruption in Russian sports. Maybe we ought to rethink the World Cup. That's where they appear vulnerable. There might be other places with some of their financial shenanigans. So look for the things that upset them. It's not going to be military. It's not going to be cyber command. It's going to be DOJ, Treasury using sanctions. And the president has a valuable tool with the new cybersecurity sanctions.
All right. Jim Lewis, senior fellow with the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Thank you for being with us. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Nicole strengthens to a major hurricane veering toward Bermuda. Bangladesh offers cash to lure militants away from terrorism. Drownings push hurricane death toll to 19 in flooded North Carolina. And a report finds indications of racial bias in San Francisco Police Department. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. And on our VOA mobile app, this is International Edition. Well, Samsung may have gotten a little good news on Tuesday as the U.S. Supreme Court took up its effort to reduce a lower court judgment that cost the South Korean company hundreds of millions of dollars in a patent fight with rival Apple. But the day also saw Samsung ending production of its troubled Galaxy Note 7 smartphone. As VOA's Jim Randall reports, a huge recall failed to solve problems with the devices overheating and smoking.
Lawyers for Apple argue that Samsung's phone looks too much like a rival Apple product, which is protected by a design patent. Attorney Noreen Krall says lower courts properly awarded hundreds of millions in damages.
11 times now, Samsung has been found guilty of intentionally and blatantly copying the iPhone. Every court at every level has agreed. We think it's wrong, and that poses chilling risks to the future of design and innovation.
Samsung's Kathleen Sullivan counters, the design patent is one of many ideas that went into the complex phone and called the judgment excessive.
The statute says is that you're entitled to the profits on the article to which the design was applied. The design was not applied to the innards of a phone.
It will be months before the Supreme Court announces its decision on Samsung's appeal. Meantime, the company is coping with the fallout from dangerous overheating problems that prompted the recall of millions of the new Galaxy Note 7 smartphones. Samsung may have tried too hard to get big battery power in a tiny package, according to IHS analyst Ian Fogg.
Every smartphone maker now is trying to prolong the battery life of the smartphone by having larger capacity batteries, improved battery performance, quicker charging. And that obviously is pushing the envelope.
Samsung's brand is hurt but not dead, according to technology expert Jonathan Rubini.
Samsung will survive this, but it will really damage their image. They will have to really work on their PR and, again, make their existing customers happy and trust them again.
And that may be a huge challenge. Jim Randall, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. U.S. fast food giant McDonald's is putting its popular clown mascot Ronald McDonald on hiatus after reports of creepy clown sightings across the U.S. continued. Now, there has been a spate of pranks and threats across the country involving clowns. International Edition's Ira Melman spoke with Randy Christensen, president of the WCA, the World Clown Association.
It's been a kind of crazy time. I think there's a kind of a mob hysteria that's come about because of primarily social media. And so it's kind of propagated this thing, not just in the United States, but now there's copycats doing this type of thing in different parts of the world.
Is this something really new, or is it the intensity of it? Or, I mean, have these things happened before in history?
Well, I would say the intensity of it has just been multiplied because of social media primarily. I think a lot of this has happened because of teenagers tweeting their friends, Facebooking, creating accounts, in order actually to scare their friends because they think it would be fun. And I would say that this type of thing has happened each year around the Halloween season, but it's just the proliferation of it this year is pretty huge.
Also, there have been threats of violence, especially on social media, from some of these people who apparently are putting on the clown makeup and everything. Is that new or what?
Well, I would say, first of all, any of the reports that I have seen, I have not seen a single one that actually is putting on makeup. They're just buying Halloween masks and standing out on a street corner or going behind a bush. And so from the World Clown Association, let me say, first of all, these people are not clowns. This is somebody that has went and bought a horror character mask and is going out trying to scare people. You know, we at the World Clown Association, the reason we do what we do in clowning is we want to bring joy and smiles and happiness and laughs, and we're visiting children in hospitals, we're visiting senior citizens in nursing homes, we're doing birthday parties for kindergarten girls. And so we have really nothing at all to do with this and see us as a totally separate camp from what we do. But yet I understand that sometimes the general population, some people can't see that difference somehow when they are walking through a park and somebody jumps out with a horror clown mask on.
Is there anything that you or your association is or can do about this?
Well, the only thing that we're trying to do is, first of all, we want our members to be safe. Because some of our members that are going out just to do community events and charity events and, as I said, visit hospitals, we also want to encourage our members, honestly, to continue on going out and doing these fairs and festivals and family events and do these things, because the only way people are going to see the positive side of what we do is if we keep doing it.
All right. Randy Christensen talking to VOA's Ira Melman. He was the president of the World Clown Association. Well, there are a number of new movies out in U.S. theaters. Joining me now to talk more about a couple of them he just saw, Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. Jeff, Ben Affleck has a new film, The Accountant.
You know, he's got so many movies coming out now. I mean, Ben Affleck, you know, he's playing Batman. Now he's playing an accountant. And now he's got a new movie coming out where he's in the roaring 20s or 30s in the gangster days that he directed 2 years ago. So he's really been working really hard. But this is a unique kind of movie for him because he plays Christian Wolfe, who's this math savant. He had autism as a child, but he has a special affinity for numbers than most people. So as he gets older, he has a small-town CPA, and he has this little office, and he works freelance for some of the most dangerous criminal organizations in the world. But the Treasury Department is finally, the Crime Enforcement Division is finally catching up to him, and it's run by Ray King, played by J.K. Simmons. And so as they're closing in on Ben Affleck, his character, they get to this robotics company that this accounting clerk played by Anna Kendrick, she discovers all this millions of dollars missing. And so they bring in Ben Affleck to kind of justify what's going on with all the money and uncloak the books. But as that happens, it just keeps unraveling all these different mysteries. So it's a great mystery, but also an incredible thriller. It's almost like a Jason Bourne film because he had these parents that, because he had all these special abilities, they trained him in martial arts. He went into the army and trained in weapons. So he is this guy who can't socialize with people, but when he has to, he can turn it on and be just a killer, a deadly weapon all on his own. Hmm. So as you're watching him not being able to socialize with people and just barely can speak, when he has to jump into action, you think you're watching Jason Bourne. So I don't know if it was something to combat Matt Damon. You know, those guys are competitive, because they definitely opened this movie for sequels. So I thought it was exciting. I thought the mystery was good. It's great to see Ben Affleck play such a totally different character. And I think the audience went crazy for it, too. So this is a real exciting mystery thriller.
And then we've got something completely different with The Birth of a Nation.
Oh, totally on the opposite end. And this is from director Nate Parker. And he's been working on this movie for about 10 years. And it's the true story of Nat Turner, who in the 1830s in South Carolina staged a slave revolt of about 60 slaves, women and children, to turn on their slave masters because of the incredible, horrible treatment they were getting. And so it was the antebellum South. So he was an educated slave. He taught himself to read, and he was a preacher. So when things were really bad in the South in the 1830s, his slave master took him to different plantations to kind of preach the gospel to other slaves to kind of keep them calm, because, you know, they were not only were they treated horribly, but there were no food, there was no money coming in, there was nothing. So really, the situation was really poor. So this is about him orchestrating an uprising and leading his people to freedom, a small amount. So this was a story I remember hearing about in college, but Nate Parker been working on this movie for 10 years, and an outstanding cast, Armie Hammer, Jackie Earle Haley, Coleman Domingo, who's one of my favorites. And so it's kind of hard to watch because, you know, there's brutal treatments, but there's also there's hope, there's optimism. It's really big Oscar contender, they're always saying. But there's also a controversy around the director because he was arrested for rape back in his college days, back, 10, 20 years ago. And there's a rape scene in the movie. Even though he was acquitted, there's all kinds of controversies around Nat Parker. Trying to, you know, he's trying to make this movie and publicize it, and it came out the same time that he was arrested for rape in college. So, yeah, it just has a big dark shadow over this movie, even though it's you know, historically accurate, but the drama is just as intense about the movie off the screen as in on.
Would you recommend seeing it?
I would. It's kind of hard to watch. It's historical. You know, it's history.
Sad,
it really
yeah.
is. Yeah, but you know what? We can't forget our past.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
You've been listening to International Edition. That is going to do it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you very much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
There are mixed trends with regard to the state of religious freedom in Vietnam. The most significant difference between these trends, said U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom David Saperstein, is primarily between rural and urban areas. Religious groups still face onerous registration requirements in order to legally operate, and authorities continue to deny legal recognition to numerous groups. Over the last year, however, authorities have granted several religious groups national-level recognition. While traditionally wary of religious communities providing social services, recent government statements have supported such activities. For example, local authorities in Hanoi have partnered with evangelical house churches to provide drug rehabilitation services. While this trend is much more encouraging in the cities, many individuals in some rural and ethnic minority areas still face great challenges when seeking to exercise their freedom of religion, particularly those belonging to unregistered religious groups. Saperstein noted that local officials in many areas continue to harass, detain, and intimidate individuals gathering for worship at independent meeting points and refuse to provide many groups with legal registration. Ethnic minority groups in the Central Highlands region, often called Montagnards, are one such example. On a recent visit to the Central Highlands, Ambassador Saperstein noted that after his meetings, police detained some of the local religious leaders who had met with him. Such harassment is unacceptable, said Ambassador Saperstein. Despite these concerning incidents, the government of Vietnam has made progress in other areas. Notably, said Saperstein, there is a new law on religion and belief under consideration in Vietnam. Under current regulations, nearly all religious activities require advanced approval by the government. There are indications that some provisions in the new draft law move away from a restrictive approval-based system towards a notification-based system. Under this model, a religious group would simply notify government officials of a planned activity instead of being required to secure formal approval. Saperstein views this reform, if enacted, as an important step forward. The U.S. government will continue to encourage Vietnam to move its laws and practices in a direction that will ease restrictions upon individuals on account of their religious beliefs. Everyone should be entitled to religious freedom, no matter where they live.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's for what's the universe?